And it's not even raising an eyebrow.
It's not even raising an eyebrow.
Stay with us, gentlemen, because Israeli airstrikes have killed more than 60 Palestinians in southern and central Gaza just on Tuesday, including one that struck an Israeli declared safe zone, quote unquote, crowded with thousands of displaced people. The day's deadliest strike came in the afternoon, hitting near a gas station outside the southern city of Khan Yunis in Al-Mawazi, a coastal region that's part of the humanitarian safe zone where the Israeli occupation force has told Palestinians to take refuge in to escape bombardment elsewhere. Official at the Khan Yunis Nasser Hospital say 17 people were killed in that attack. Nearby areas are packed with tent camps with residents previously displaced.
I fled from North Gaza to the south. We were told about the injury of our cousins. My cousin and his mother, father and brother were all staying in the safe areas that they were claiming are safe, whilst they are areas of death, not safety. This is a crime against humanity and the whole world. And nations are watching the brutality that Jews, Zionists, are treating us with. This is all death. Every day there are strikes. Every day they are exterminating our people.
So far we've heard the analysis on the U.S. foreign policy, the U.K. foreign policy as far as this genocide. And now a dramatic surge, Ali, in attacks on U.N.-run evacuation centers, the attacks on the so-called safe zones, particularly cruel.
Well, actually, you know, it's not new. Since October 7, they have been doing it, you know, whether in UNRWA facilities or hospitals or, you know, places run by international groups. What they are doing is, you know, as my friend Andrew Shaw said, it's extermination. Mm. What happened a couple of days ago under the excuse of attacking Muhammad Daif, it's like, you know, killing dozens, 60, 70, 80 people just to get to one person. So that is justified in the eyes of the Zionists and their supporters. It's a shame. It's a shame, to be honest with you, that the so-called international community and the United Nations is shamelessly silent, especially when, you know, children and women and, you know, elderly people being just blown to pieces. But also, since the question is about, you know, international places or run places in Gaza, and they are being destroyed, and you hear nothing, you know, beside, you know, empty words of condemnation. This is the crime of the century, and unfortunately, the world leader still so blind to really see and you know, try to accept, you know, what's happening is a genocide against Palestinians, where you have, like, just, you know, a couple of days ago, as you mentioned, there were families, you know, whole families being wiped out, or maybe one child left, or maybe one elderly person left.
Yeah.
And with all the social media, with all the access to information, and you still see, you know, world politician, whether in the UK or France or US or even Canada, mm-hmm. you know, still literally not losing sleep over what's happening.
Yeah.
And it's a crime, and they are complicit in this crime. It doesn't matter how you look at it. It doesn't matter how we try to package it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a genocide, and unfortunately, yeah. Western leaders are complicit in this genocide, and more sadly is some so-called states in the Arab region are also complicit as well.
Ted, you heard Ali use the word genocide, which we have been using for since the beginning, because we know where this was going to head. A campaign of extermination. And it's not limited to the more than 2 million Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, but anyone who comes to their aid. According to the UN, over 200 UNRWA staffers have been killed. What message does that deliberate killing of these staffers, these people, send?
You see, there are two things that come out of this. The first thing is that people all over the world, including the United Kingdom, whose government is enabling this stuff, are seeing and inserting themselves into that situation. They will not be able to unsee what they have seen. A few months ago, when we started this whole Gaza under attack program, I gave it a lifespan of 3 months, tops, that we'd be moving on to the next thing.
Yeah.
It's still going on. It leads me to my second point. Totalitarian regimes, this is the lesson of all of history. Totalitarian regimes are very rarely toppled. They actually destroy themselves. If Adolf Hitler had not seen it fit to invade Russia, if he had not seen it fit to declare war on America, Second World War would have gone on for a far longer time. Mm-hmm. If Japan had not actually attacked Pearl Harbor, things would have been a lot sweeter for it for a far lot longer. So it is that these people have given the world the ammunition by which the world can judge them. Mm-hmm. And they will judge them very freely. The only problem is, how long can we survive? How many people have to be crushed into this meat grinder before people come to their senses?
And briefly, what is it that's preventing a ceasefire from happening? Is it politicians asleep at the wheel, or is it politicians around the world, Israeli allies, who are in the pockets of the likes of AIPAC, the Israel lobby?
Do you know, if it was as simple as that, it would be easy to resolve. It's not. On the American side, it's about oil. It's about pure, simple greed. Oil and the need to be in control of that part of the world, no matter the cost to human life, to female life, to children's life, to non-combatant life, to any kind of life. It's purely and simply about who makes more money.
Energy has to, the flow of energy has to continue.
Exactly.
Out of that region. All right. We'll continue in a few moments. But for now, Shia Muslims across the globe marked the most significant day of Muharram this week, commemorating the martyrdom of Prophet Muhammad's grandson, Imam Hussein, who was brutally massacred with his family and friends for standing up against the oppressive and tyrant ruler of his time some 1,400 years ago. Mourners attending the Ashura procession in London said the commemorations this year were more symbolic, given a similar kind of oppression being meted out to Palestinians who are experiencing an ongoing genocide.
In regards to Karbala and Gaza, I think we can definitely find a link there, because as Shia Muslims, as followers of the Ahlul Bayt, Imam Hussein alayhi salam is the epitome of sacrifice for the sake of the oppressed, for the sake of justice. And as a very famous line, he said, someone like me cannot give allegiance to someone like Yazid. So we notice here that he didn't just say me, I will not give allegiance to him. He said someone like me. So it's, in a way, it's as if though he's referring to, even in future generations, there's always going to be people like Hussein standing for truth, standing for justice from all religions, not just even Muslims. And there's always going to be forces like those of Yazid. And so we're meant to basically emulate that and know which sides are those that are on Hussein's side in today's world and those that are on Yazid's side in today's world. And obviously we can see that clearly in Palestine. It's not even a question of, oh, we should investigate. It's open to the whole world to see.
Well, I have the obviously Palestinian flag, because Ashura, if you look at Palestine, you look at Ashura, it's the same thing. It's injustice. Imam Hussein stood up for injustice, and what we're doing out here with this very small symbol is we're standing up against injustice. Complete injustice. I mean, it's black and white. There's no gray area in killing innocent people and killing children. There's thousands and thousands of innocent children. You know, last night was Abdullah Radir, you know, Ali al-Azhar. No, it's there in front of your eyes. You'd be really blind not to see it. So it's our responsibility, each and every one of us, to stand against injustice, even with such a simple thing as this Palestinian flag, which is something we're trying to pass on to the younger generations.
Imam Hussein, with his companion and his family, he sacrificed for the Islam. Palestine people also, they are Muslims, now been genocided with the Israeli regime, and they want also the American, also they support them. That's which big problem now in this world we live in these days. They start to demolish all the countries of Muslim countries, special Palestine. Now the talk that they want to destroy all the Palestine and all no space for them, and they want to throw them in different countries. This is not right. We should all, we are Muslim, all to be unit and to stop. And alhamdulillah, we got some countries which is like Iran, Islamic Republic of Iran, and Lebanon, and in Palestine also himself, and Yemen, Houthi Yemen. They are all together and they fight for this, the right of Palestine. And hopefully, and we hope all the Muslims that Muslim country of Palestine to be established and built up there. That's what you see the flags of, because they know this, the policy of Imam Hussein is to protect all Muslims anywhere in the world, which is now Iran and other countries, they follow this way.
The Israeli occupation army says it'll begin sending draft notices to Jewish ultra-Orthodox men next week, a stab that could destabilize Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's regime and trigger more large protests in the community. The announcement followed a landmark Supreme Court order for young religious men to begin enlisting for military service. Under long-standing political arrangements, ultra-Orthodox men had been exempt from the draft, which is compulsory for most Jewish men.
The government, the High Court have decided all Haredi, Orthodox boys have to go to the army, recruited in the army. The army is not an army for fighting, it's an army which is an indoctrination camp of Zionism, of atheism, against religion. Therefore, our children, our boys, and I have a son on the road over here, will not go to the army, not for 1 minute.
So we only have 5 minutes or so left. A couple of questions to get in there. I'll start with Ali in Ontario. How are the struggles from Karbala mirrored in this bombardment, of incessant bombardment of the Gaza Strip?
Well, Karbala is the day that literally awakened the world. It happened more than 1,400 years ago. And people, hundreds of thousands, and not only Muslims, not only Shias, I know from Lebanon and from Palestine and from Iraq and from Syria, where huge numbers of brothers and sisters from the Christian community participating in what we call majalis, the events, and the march for justice. I've seen so many videos of ulama from the Sunni school of thought praising Ashura and comparing between Sayyida Zainab alayhi salam and Palestinian women who lost their children, their husbands during this barbaric genocide by the Zionist state against the Palestinian. If I can sideline, you show the clips of Zion State Army and police chasing religious Jewish who refused to serve in the army. Well, we've seen many footages where they were beaten up and dragged in the street.
Yeah.
And if this is what they do to their own people, and we know what they are doing in Gaza, yeah, that really gave a clear picture about their tyranny and their barbarism and the criminality.
And other than that, Ted, what does that say about the morale among the members of the Israeli occupation force? Are they not bogged down in the Gaza? This is 9 months later, and they thought they were going to go in, purportedly take out Hamas,
clean it out, and then go back home.
And look where we are now.
It goes back to my first point, that totalitarian regimes have a way of self-destructing.
Mm-hmm.
That this is another step in the tiptoe towards the self-destruction of the Zionist state. There is one other thing, is that actually the consciousness of the world community has subtly shifted. But it's not, it's totally lost on the people who were posturing and doing the glad handing and calling for ceasefires and so on. It's completely lost on them.
Mm-hmm.
But the consciousness of the world has moved forward in such a way that what is happening in Gaza is being felt as a pinch point and as a pain point for people who are not Muslim, people who are not Middle Eastern, people who are completely irreligious. All they know is that what's going on is a crime against humanity.
And what do you make of Netanyahu's craving for this larger regional war, trying to expand the war into Lebanon now that they know, it's clear to many, that they have lost this, for want of a better word, war in the Gaza, because Hamas is still standing?
How did we describe the mentality of Adolf Hitler? The man is not... He's not thinking correctly. I mean, I decline to say that a head of state is insane, but what he's doing is such a bizarre desire that the average man on the street will tell you what you're looking for is either impossible or foolish.
Impossible or foolish. And Ali, we haven't talked about the atrocities that are taking place in the West Bank, no surprise to any of us, certainly not to you, at the hands of the Israeli occupation force and the settler terrorists who are armed, as we know. It is an important part of the discourse surrounding this genocide. Is that not a fair assessment?
It is. And the irony is the U.S. and Canada, I'm not sure about the U.K., they impose sanctions against certain settlers group who are brutalizing Palestinians and taking the land and attacking, ordinary people in the street. But I can't help but to be too political here. What's happening in the West Bank is another indication of the failure of the Palestinian leadership in the West Bank. Because next to what happened or what is happening in Gaza, and here you have what is going on in the West Bank and the continuation of Israeli raids, Zionist Israeli army raids and the settlers on and civilian Palestinians. I know, sometimes we have to be diplomatic. But if you allow me, I want to go back to point raised by Brother Ted about the powerful Zionist lobby in the U.S. or U.K. Yes, they may be so powerful and when it comes to money and institution, etc., but let's keep in mind, the leaders of political parties, whether in UK or US or France or other places, they are fully complicit and they are cowards. That's why, the Zionist lobby is strong. Because if they have any morality to stand on, this will not be taking place. Imagine after 285 days to for now, with the criminal act by Ben Netanyahu, he is visiting the U.S. Congress. Just go figure.
Exact. Go figure. And you're not alone in thinking that, Ali. I'm afraid we're out of time, gentlemen. That is all the time we have for this Gaza Under Attack. My thanks, of course, to Ted Kofi and Dr. Ali Mala and to you. Until we meet again, continue to keep Palestine in your hearts.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah, walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illa Allah. Allahu ya Allah, wallahu akbar.
selected the statements by Imam Khomeini concerning Muharram and the Ashura uprising. Keep Karbala event and the holy name of Hussein ibn Ali alive, for by its survival, Islam would survive. It is the blood of the master of the martyrs that sets fire to all the bloods in Islamic nations. The unity of word which became the font of our victory was made so by the effects of these lamentation gatherings and Islamic propagation congregations. Muharram is the month of the great movement of the Master of the Martyrs, peace be upon him, and the Lord of the Pious, who by his uprising against Taghut taught humanity how to beat and build and how to annihilate cruelty and the despots by offer of lives and sacrifices. This is the preamble to Islamic teachings for our nation till the end.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله dear audience welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRI English Radio. Well, in this program, we try to recite some sentences and viewpoints and parts of speeches of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh, who was the great founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and then try to elaborate and talk about some points that this great character has made in order for us to make use of these points and lessons in our daily lives as Muslims. About the month of Muharram, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh said, Muharram is the month of great movement of the Dawiyan, of the martyrs, and the leader of God's saints. By his uprising against the Taghut, Imam Hussein alayhi salam taught mankind how to fight and to build. Well, this viewpoint of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi is about the lessons of the tragedy of Ashura and Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Karbala, Allahumma arzuqna Karbala, 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 Allahumma arzuqna Karbala.
You know, the custom of mourning of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam is not just a narration of an historical event. In fact, it serves as an open university in which professional educators give lectures on a range of topics and throw light upon the various facets of Islam. Topics like Usul al-Din, Ahkam, Akhlaq, Islamic history, worship, business matters, Quran, traditions, fiqh, and etc., are propagated among the people in this time. It is as these congregations that practical guidance is given in the art of debating, public speaking, and counseling. The secrets of a successful life in this world and in the hereafter are divulged over here. While delivering the lecture, the speaker should use those words which are easy for the new generation to understand and at the time maintain the dignity and decorum of the pulpit from where he is delivering his speech.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Zionist regime is facing a legal challenge over its notorious Sede Taimon military camp in the Naqab Desert, just east of Gaza, where it has held thousands of Palestinians deemed to be suspected unlawful combatants since early October. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Reuters reported recently that Israel intends to phase out the Sede Taimon facility. CNN, citing claims made by a state attorney during a hearing at Israel's High Court, recently reported that several hundred detainees have already been transferred from Sede Taimon to other detention centers, including Ofer Military Prison in the West Bank. Hundreds more will be transferred in the coming weeks, according to the state attorney's claims. But the Zionist regime will still use the military camp for its initial screening of detainees. According to the Association for Civil Rights, one of the groups that initiated legal proceedings to shut down the Sede Taimon facility, the rights group said holding detainees in the Sede Taimon camp is prohibited under both Israeli and international law, even if for short periods and when the number of detainees is low. Sede Taimon military camp has been described as the Zionist regime's answer to Guantanamo Prison, an American military camp where nearly 800 Muslim men and boys have been held since 2002. According to the American Civil Liberties Union, Guantanamo has become a symbol of injustice, abuse, and disregard for the rule of law. The same could be said for Sede Taimon military camp. Palestinians from Gaza who were held at the Sede Taimon facility and later released, as well as whistleblowing doctors who worked at the site, have given horrific testimony regarding treatment at the camp. According to the Association for Civil Rights in Israel, which told the Israeli High Court that detainees are blindfolded for days even during medical treatment and toilet use, said more than 1,000 detainees are held in cage-like facilities without beds or any other equipment. The Israeli human rights group said testimonies have revealed an incomprehensible reality of surgeries performed without anesthesia, the holding of detainees for days on end in painful positions and such severe handcuffing that led to amputation. A whistleblower who worked at Sede Taimon facility described doctors denying painkillers to a detainee during an operation in what he and others felt had been a deliberate act of revenge. Former detainees, many of whom were arbitrarily swept up by Israeli regime troops in Gaza and held without any way of communicating with their families or a lawyer, amounting to enforced disappearance, have said they were beaten, given electric shocks during interrogation, and deprived of adequate food. Diyar Al-Khalut, the Gaza bureau chief for the London-based Al-Arabi Al-Jadid newspaper, said he was subjected to torture daily and lost nearly 100 pounds during his more than month-long detention at Sedat Heyman camp. Upon his release, the journalist's vision was impaired after being blinded for 33 consecutive days and nights. Yunus Al-Hamlawi, a senior nurse who was arrested in November after leaving Ashifa Hospital in Gaza City, told the New York Times that during his interrogation at Sedat Heyman, a female officer ordered two troops to beat him with a metal stick, causing him to bleed and experience unbearable pain. Al-Hamlawi's account echoes that of a released detainee interviewed by UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, which has been collecting testimonies from Palestinians dumped by the Zionist regime at Karam Abu Salem crossing into Gaza. The detainee interviewed by UNRWA said that he and others were beaten with metal sticks, causing another man he was detained with to get sick and die. Al-Hamlawi's testimony was buried dozens of paragraphs down in the lengthy feature story published by the New York Times, which makes no mention of sexual abuse reported by Palestinian detainees in either the title or taser. The detention of residents of occupied territory in prisons outside of that territory is a violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention, as observed by Agdamir, a Palestinian human rights and prisoner advocacy group. This practice is also recognized as a war crime under Article 8 of the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, according to Agdamir. Israeli regime violations against Palestinian detainees are hardly limited to the Sedat Heyman facility. Palestinians held at other Israeli regime prisons are also being treated appallingly. Adnan Al-Borsh, the head of orthopedics at Ashifa Hospital, the largest medical facility in Gaza, was killed in mid-April after reportedly being beaten and tortured in Ofer prison in the West Bank. Al-Borsh was abducted by Israeli regime troops at a hospital in northern Gaza in mid-December. As of early May, when Al-Borsh's death in Israeli regime custody was first reported, nearly 500 medical workers had been killed in Gaza since October 7th, and another 1,500 were wounded and more than 300 were being held by the Zionist regime, according to the health ministry in the territory. The Euromed Human Rights Monitor published a report in late May based on the testimonies of 100 Palestinian men, women, boys and girls who had been abducted by the Zionist regime during its ground invasion of Gaza and later released. The Geneva-based group concluded in its report that the Israeli army routinely commits widespread crimes of arbitrary arrest, enforced disappearance, premeditated murder, torture, inhuman treatment, sexual violence, and denial of a fair trial. Palestinians testified to Euromed Monitor that they were also beaten, subjected to psychological and physical torture, denied access to food and medical care, and made to endure degrading acts such as being spat and urinated on by the Zionist regime troops. Al-Damir denounced the omission of Israel's abuses against Palestinian prisoners and detainees in the recent announcement by Karim Khan. the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, stating that he was seeking arrest warrants for senior Israeli regime officials. For decades, the Zionist regime has built a judicial system for the purpose of controlling, criminalizing, and collectively punishing Palestinians, according to Ad-Damir. Ad-Damir added, this system allowed Israel to arbitrarily arrest masses of Palestinians after October 7th. Nearly 9,000 Palestinians have been arrested since then, Ad-Damir said on May 22nd, and are being held in deteriorating conditions and subjected to increasing acts of torture and ill treatment. Ad-Damir called on Khan to investigate Israeli personnel for crimes committed against Palestinian detainees, including the use of administrative detention orders by which the Zionist regime holds Palestinians without charge or trial on the basis of secret evidence withheld from the detainee and their counsel. The rights group specifically called on Khan to investigate Israeli National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir, the current and former heads of the Israel Prison Service and other prison authorities, as well as Israeli regime military judges and prosecutors, and the head of Israel's security service for his responsibility for the torture practiced during interrogations.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners, and welcome to Islamic Upbringing on IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Zainab, and I'm thrilled to be with you today. This program is dedicated to exploring the vital topics of raising our children according to the guidance of the Quran and the prophetic traditions. We're here to answer your questions and address your concerns and provide you with valuable insights to help you navigate the challenges of bringing up your children. Our aim is to provide you with practical advice and inspiration to help you raise your children in a way that honors their faith and nurtures their character. While joining us today is Brother Mir Abid, a research scholar in the field of psychology. Hailing from Karachi, Pakistan, Brother Abid has earned his degree in psychology from Pakistan itself, and currently he's studying in the Hawza Ilmi of Qom. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you very much.
So, Brother Abid, we have been discussing the characteristics of teenagers, and in the last episode we discussed the identity search is one of the characteristics of teenagers, which is a broad topic, and you said that our teenagers should know where they came from, why they came, where they have to go, and how they have to go. That's very, very important. And Brother Abid has been helping us with the insights to help them in the identity search process. Yes, Brother Abid.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Thank you very much. In our previous discussions, we saw how beautifully Imam alayhi salam mentioned and clarified his identity, that who I am, who I really am. Okay. So while, you know, how a person was, this is very important to know. You know, if it had been someone else, yes, he or she had been flattered by that. You know, if someone comes with you and tells you that you are the...
Gives you,
you know,
some more...
You are a leader, you are something special.
Right.
And you forget, you know, what you really are. You get lost in that. But our leader, he is very much clear. And he knows who he is. Okay?
Right.
And he doesn't get lost in those flattering and, you know, in those sweet words. And he tells that I am one of the servants of the Prophet of Allah.
Right.
And this is the thing, the reason for mentioning this hadith is this is how we need to clearly know what we are. You know, it at times, it's not really, you know, it's neglected in our cultures. You know, the parents are busy in their own things and, you know, they don't really care that this clarity is very important.
Right.
That what I am, and you know, it's as we had said, that it has to be internalized. Mm-hmm. What I am, you know, just saying that I'm Muslim and I, for example, I'm servant of Allah, it has to be, you know, at least on the cognitive level,
right?
At least in the belief level. Yes, this is the starting, okay?
Right.
I believe I have a clear understanding of this on the understanding level. And from this understanding, when I act according to this belief and the requirements of this belief, that is, you know, I have to be careful about myself.
Right.
I'm not supposed to see anything that I want. I cannot do anything that I want.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to do what Allah wants me to.
And I'm being watched. I will be answering.
Yes, and
I'm accountable.
I'm accountable, and there's, you know, this life hereafter. And let me give you an example of, you know, expressing this identity, the clarity of identity, of you know, one of the companions of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. In fact, one of the family members of Imam Hussein alayhi salam is once again. We'll mention the example of Hazrat Qasim alayhi salam. And, you know, how clear this identity is for him, that standing in that particular situation,
yes,
in the battlefield of Karbala, he introduces himself.
Yes.
You know, and how beautifully he introduces himself. He says, and let me read this Arabic. It's
text.
Beautiful. Itself, yeah, that in the Arabic text, he says, you know, the enemy is standing. He's just, keep in mind, he's 13 years old, young, you know, it's the time period when most of us are playing and, you know, engaged,
yes,
in our own things.
And what he says, let's hear that after a short break. Dear listeners, don't go anywhere, stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We have been discussing identity search. And Brother Abed, you were telling us in the event of Karbala, how Hazrat Qasim was very confident about his identity and how he introduced himself. And you're going to read the Arabic text.
So this is a great example of the clarity in identity. And before I read this, this is a very great inspiration for us. And
right,
we can...
For,
you know,
the teens as well.
Yes, while helping our teenagers in developing their identity, we can do tawassul with these personalities, inshallah, that may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala help us in helping our teenagers develop their identity, the true identity that we need to have.
Right.
Have the identity that is going to help them,
right,
in making decisions, some of the important decisions in their life.
True.
So this is how Hazrat Qasim says that, in tankuruni fa anabnul hasan sibtu nabi al mustafa al mu'taman. So if you don't know who am I, then I'm Qasim. son of Hassan, who is son of the, you know, the Prophet of Islam. And then he, so this is the basic identity that he's telling, that who am I, who is my father, who is my grandfather. And then he's telling something about his purpose here. So purpose is one of the parts of the, you know, identity.
Identity, okay.
So he says, Haza Husaynun kal asir al murtahan. So this is Hussein that you have surrendered, who is, you know, who you have made prisoner. And he's telling that I am follower of someone, I am lover of someone, that I'm here, and this is my identity.
Yes.
That, and I'm coming here to defend him.
Yes.
So, and then he says that بَيْنَ أُنَاسٍ لَا سُخُو سَوْبَ الْمُزَنِ, that may Allah will not give you, Allah will not quench your thirst on that day when everyone will be thirsty.
Oh.
And you know how beautifully he's telling the concept of the concept of leadership that he has by telling, mentioning.
In fact, using those words, he's actually helping others, the opposition party, to realize their identity, to realize the purpose of their lives. When he's saying that on that day when everyone will be thirsty and you won't be able to quench your thirst, he's giving them this, you know, he's giving them this time to realize what they are doing.
Yes, he is capable of doing this in the very best manner. And he's telling that the impacts of our actions, they don't, you know, they just don't end up here. You know, the concept of the life hereafter, how beautifully he's telling the, you know, just how mature this identity is. So if someone whose identity is not developed, we mentioned that the problems that they have, and let's continue our discussion
after a short break. So dear listeners, don't go anywhere, we'll be back in a while.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We are with Brother Mir Abed, helping us with a torch of enlightenment towards identity search in the teenagers. Because when we have teens, and even at times adults, have not really realized what they have come for in this world. So this identity search begins in the teenage, and Brother Abed is helping us with the insight how to help them in this identity search.
So from a basic introduction, we are moving towards another phase of this identity problems that a teenager is facing. And inshallah, after a while, we'll move on to the suggestions that we can, the solutions that we can suggest to help them, you know, come up with this kind of a mature identity.
Right.
So, you know, some of the narrations that we have are very foundational and, you know, very, that are helping out with some essential problems, some essential questions. So let's return to the narration by Imam Ali alayhi salam, where he was telling us that a teenager is engaged in an internal war, and this war was between the intellect
and the foolishness.
And the foolishness, the superficial thinking, the, you know, the desires, that part, you know, the part that is common between us and the, you know, other creatures such as animals, for example. So this, you know, this war between these two faculties that we have, the, for example, the akal, the intellect, and the nafs and you know, the desires, the teenager, as we know, the, you know, the hormonal changes, the biological side, as we see that, the storm of some kind of, you know, this, there's too much dopamine, there is these the, you know, the sex, there's hormones,
right, that and are, there's, you know, also this biological war at the same time.
Yes, so the teenager is facing a tough time, and these changes that creates a kind of, you know, that is a sort of making a way, making you know, it's a prerequisite towards the identity creation, identity, right, development. So he's going after, you know, different ideas, and he's raising different questions. And if this role confusion, you know, we see different people, we find different people who even reached, you know, at the, who are 30 years old, and they still don't know what my, you know, that I'm a husband, and I have certain duties at home, and, you know, they are still in that old, you know, engaged with their friends and those activities. So again, you know, that identity, and a particular part of identity that, for example, I have a certain role. I am a married person.
Right.
And, you know, this identity, the crisis, the clarity was not there in, yes, those teenage years. And it's going on, and, you know, it's carried on still till the, you know, adulthood.
Right. Well, thank you so much, brother, for today's episode and those insights you gave us. And we hope our parents and teenagers both will get help with that. Thank you, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Islam solves all of our problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Day 288 of the U.S.-Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip. The Israeli regime continues its indiscriminate bombings of the Palestinian territory, killing more civilians, mostly women and children. Iran condemns Israel's attacks on education facilities in the Gaza Strip as criminal acts. And Cyprus observes the anniversary of an operation by the Turkish military, which led to the split of the Mediterranean island into Turkish and Greek-ruled parts. Hello and welcome to World News. Coming to you out of Tehran, I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, it is day 288 of the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza, and the Tel Aviv regime continues its unrelenting air and artillery strikes against the blockaded territory. In one of the strikes, at least three